All right, our second case for this morning is Marion Healthcare against Becton, Dickinson & Company. And I believe we begin with Mr. Molo.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm Steve Molo and I represent the plaintiffs, the three downstate medical providers. The first innocent buyer from an antitrust conspiracy is the right party to sue. This court has stated that rule in multiple cases, and the district court ignored that precedent and misapplied the Illinois brick rule in dismissing our complaint. We come before the court today to ask that our complaint be reinstated and that we be allowed to go forward. In Paper Systems, this court held that the presence of layers of wholesalers, distributors, retailers within the conspiracy doesn't matter. It's the first buyer outside the conspiracy that has standing to sue, and to hold otherwise would abandon the doctrine of joint and several liability, which Paper Systems noted. It explained, if the presence of any wholesaler or retailer in the chain of distribution creates complications too great to allow joint liability, then the norm that every conspirator is responsible for the acts of every other conspirator would be overthrown.
So can I ask you this, Mr. Molo? I've understood part of your argument in this respect. And forgive me for this analogy that popped into my mind, but it is to be that, in fact, it's not a simple manufacturer to distributor to provider to the final
Correct.
User situation, but there are quite a few cross relationships, cross payments, cross relationships that exist among the manufacturer, the GPO, the distributors, et cetera. And what it called to my mind is in the more illegal sense of the term, many a drug conspiracy where we are asked to decide, is this merely a buyer-seller arrangement or are the people further upstream participants in one another's business, basically? Are they joint venturers or somehow? So if you're in a heroin conspiracy, you aren't just selling to your distributors who are selling to the street people. Maybe the distributors are all part of the selling function. So that's what it reminded me of. So if you could explain how these interrelationships among, in your case, Becton and the GPOs and the distributors tend to make them something that should be viewed as a single entity for Illinois BRIC,
sure.
That would help me.
So the healthcare provider provides, there's two ways they can buy. They can either buy directly to Becton through Becton, or they can distributor through Becton, or they buy through a GPO. In the GPO context, the provider joins the GPO, the GPO being group purchasing organization. The GPO negotiates with Becton and sets prices and terms in what are called the net dealer contracts. And the providers then and the distributors enter into something called a distributor agreement to purchase pursuant to the net dealer contract, which has the price and terms. And Becton distributors then enter into the dealer notification agreements, and the distributors agree to enforce the net dealer contract. Now,
so all of this is happening other than the provider joining the GPO.
Correct.
And there are only two of them, right?
Yes. Well, there are two that are named here.
Two named here who have a very dominant
Correct.
Position in the market. So the provider is basically looking at this web of relationships. They aren't just going to Becton and saying, we'd like some syringes.
No, I mean, as a practical matter, I mean, we all know how complex healthcare is today. And as a practical matter, most smaller healthcare providers need to go to a group purchasing organization to try to hope to extract any kind of benefit in a bargain. And as you saw in the complaint we've alleged, these two GPOs that are named here together represent approximately 75% of the healthcare spend. And the prices that they negotiated, if you look at page one of our brief, are extraordinarily bad for their members when it comes to Becton products or the three product markets that we've alleged. It's as much as 36% higher than the products that are sold from its nearest competitor.
But let me, suppose we agreed with you on the Illinois brick point. Certainly some of the defendants before, some of the appellees before us, have argued that your complaint anyway fails to state a conspiracy claim. And if that were the case, then Illinois brick would just drop out, wouldn't it?
Well, if we don't have a conspiracy, the issue here, yes. I mean,
yeah, but then there's no Illinois brick issue, there's nothing.
Correct. So when we use the term conspiracy, I mean, they've alleged or they've argued that we haven't adequately pled a conspiracy, but, you know, we are at the pleading stage here. And at this initial stage, all we've got to allege is that it's plausible that there's a conspiracy, that, as this court has said, it's a non-negligible probability that the claim is valid, and it's above the speculation level. It's a conspiracy case, often proved by circumstantial evidence, and that's what can be expected. So we only need to allege a unity of purpose and a common design or understanding.
Well, and evidence, as they say, that tends to exclude the possibility of individual action.
Well, here, I mean, in terms
of the Monsanto language, that's the Matsushita language, you know, that's a pretty standard part of antitrust liability.
The circumstances that we've alleged do indicate a unity of purpose. They're engaging in these same contracts which have these very punitive provisions. There's this sole source provision, the penalty pricing, the long-term nature of the contracts, the payments of the among the conspirators. There's payments from Becton to the GPOs, millions of dollars. There's payments that are required by Becton from the distributors to the GPOs. And I come back to, when you look at the result of all of this, you get the pricing that is shown on page one of our brief. You get that differential. So when you combine all of those facts, there's enough there that's said. And
so, so let me just tie this up. Your position would be then that the reason it's in the independent that goes beyond the independent, they're getting more than they would get acting independently, is because of this network of cross payments that's going on. If they weren't part of the deal, they wouldn't be
the cross payments and the penalty pricing terms and the long-term nature of the contracts, which ultimately foreclose competition in these markets.
But what you're calling a penalty price term, I think, is just the fact that the amount of the rebate is not ascertained until the end of the year, when they can do a look back and see how many Becton products.
It's not just that. It's that if, in fact, you fail to meet their terms, the consequences are extraordinarily bad for the purchaser. So it's, when I say penalty, it's not just a mere rebate situation. It's a bad rebate situation that is being used because they have this extraordinary power in the market. As we've shown, again, in the brief, there's a chart that shows they've got roughly 60%, 55 or 60% in each of these markets.
But the distributors, it's enforcing these agreements, just enforcing these. I mean, and you need the distributors, right?
Correct.
Because
the distributors
the
are absolutely
point.
Essential.
Otherwise, Illinois Brick does bar it. So.
Correct. Which is why, you know, Judge Barrett, that we have the conspiracy and we have a conspiracy pled, because we're purchasing through distributors, but those distributors are what this court in brand names referred to as the cat's paw of the conspiracy. They're the enforcer. They're the one that's going out making sure that the terms that Becton has set with the GPOs are enforced. They're allowing Becton to have information about the sales and the performance under these contracts. And they allow Becton...
Now, would they not do that if they were not part of the conspiracy? Is this against self-interest than the conspiracy?
Well, to the extent that they do it, and also to the extent that they are actually paying bonuses, commissions, whatever you want to call them, not commissions, bonuses to the distributor's employees. So any one of these things taken by itself, you could look at and say, well, gee, is that really, you know, an act of a conspirator? You know, there happens to be a contract. There happens to be a penalty pricing term. But when you combine all of these together and you look at the extraordinary, you know, nature of some of these terms, as well as the effect on the market, with Becton having the extraordinary market power and able to extract the kind of pricing that it is, there's enough there at this stage to plead a conspiracy. Now, you know,
did you plead anything about what the prices would be if they just went, if your clients, the providers, sure, just went to Becton and bought without participating in the GPOs?
The pricing is essentially the same. We allege that it's essentially the same, that that is the market that said if a distributor were to go. So they're not going to get a better price
of better from GPO. You would think,
but these GPOs with 75% of the market share, who Becton ought to come out of a negotiation with, you know, cowering in the corner because they're dealing with this powerful GPO, walks away with pricing that's 36% above its competitor in a market. That makes absolutely no sense in a fair and honest market. Now, you know, also, they make a big deal about this idea of hub and spoke and
rimless wheels. Yeah. It reminded me of the New Yorker. Stop that metaphor.
I go back to American Tobacco. In the Supreme Court has never imposed the kind of formalism and antitrust conspiracies that the defendants are trying to impose here. You know, the great quote from American Tobacco is, "It's not the form of the combination or the particular means used, but the result achieved that the statute condemns." And when you go through the cases of Interstate Circuit, Masonite from the Supreme Court, this court's Toys R Us case that we've cited, and they're all discussed at pages 34, 33, 34, 35 of our reply brief, it makes clear that not every conspirator needs to know what the other conspirator is doing. Not everyone has to sit down and join the conspiracy at the same time. In Masonite, the court actually noted that, you know, it might reveal itself to a conspirator over time that they, in fact, are participating in a conspiracy or have the opportunity to participate in the conspiracy. And the cases are clear that acquiescence to the offer of participating in this scheme is enough. And, you know, it's a pretty good deal for these distributors as well, too, because they're able to charge. Not only do they have Becton paying these bonuses to their employees, but they're able to charge a markup on an inflated price that is set by the GPOs and by Becton. So all of them together combine to restrain trade. As a result of that, Becton has markets. I mean, they have markets where they don't really have serious competition. These are tough businesses that require economies of scale. And, you know, the other fact to consider here, too, is that these are essentially commodity products. I mean, you can have different types of ears of corn and say, you know, this corn's sweeter than the other corn, so maybe there's some differences in these syringes where one is slightly different than another. But these are not high-tech medical devices. These are syringes and catheters that we're talking about.
Okay.
So we've stated our claim.
If you want to save a little rebuttal time, I'll just alert you that you're winding down.
And if there's no further questions,
Mr.
Caddy, thank you.
So that'll give you a bit. Mr. Chandler?
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. I'm Adam Chandler, here for the United States in support of the appellants. I'd like to just make a small but important point. The government filed a brief in this case because we were concerned about the enforcement implications of the district court's judgment, which we thought misapplied this court's precedents. The rule of this circuit is clear and sensible. The first purchaser outside a conspiracy can sue. The rule is also relatively easy to apply in this case, although I know, Chief Judge Wood, your question about this looking more complicated than a traditional linear distribution chain, it does feature that chain in one respect. It does have manufacturers, distributors, and consumers. And we think that is sufficient to resolve the Illinois brick issue without even...
So you don't think we need to look at the GPO role in all of this?
No,
Your Honor. Or actually, the other thing that the other side has urged us to look at is the Supreme Court's concerns about tracing. Where does the overcharge go? If it starts at Becton, then how much of it is absorbed by the distributor and how much is passed on and so on?
Right, Your Honor. To begin, no, I don't think the GPOs even need to factor into the analysis at all. But if anything, I think it makes the relationship even more direct than otherwise, since GPOs have providers as members. But to your second point about the perceived difficulty of potentially tracing an overcharge, there's a few responses to that. The first is that the recent Supreme Court decision, Apple versus Pepper, had to make a choice between whether the concern was about the directness or privity of parties or whether tracing an overcharge because of a pass-on claim, they had to choose which one of those two was the bigger concern, and they chose the former. They were less concerned about the presence of a pass-on claim, and it was the directness that was dispositive in that case.
Well, the other thing that was dispositive in that case was just that it was a non-traditionally structured market. You know, it was Apple allowing the app developers or not allowing, basically saying if you want to sell to our people, you come into our store.
That's right, Your Honor. But it also, although it was a little more difficult to perceive in that case, it also had a traditional kind of distribution chain where Apple was at the top selling distribution services, and then the app developers made an independent pricing decision that the consumers then paid. So
as long as it ended in 99 cents, yes.
That was one restriction. That's right,
but
Your Honor.
They paid to Apple. You're right. Apple's at the top of the chain, and then you had the app producers, and then you kind of had Apple again. Right.
That's right, Your Honor. Right. That's where the pass-on claim came from, because it did have that structure. But because the payment went directly to Apple, the Supreme Court said those plaintiffs could sue. So it was the directness of the payment that was dispositive,
right,
not the presence of the pass-on claim. So that's one response. I'd also point the court to the last few pages of Paper Systems, which repeatedly contemplate that a court might have to trace an overcharge and do a pass-on calculation, and seemed untroubled by that and did not think that warranted a separate rule. And the final point I'll make on this is that it's not at all clear from the complaint that there is even an opportunity for pass-on here. That's because the GPOs and the manufacturers set the prices in those net dealer contracts. And as the district court recognized, the distributors don't have a hand then in setting the prices. The only thing that might allow them to absorb the overcharge is that they charge a percentage markup on top of the prices set in the net dealer contract. But that was not actually in the complaint alleged to be part of the scheme or part of the exclusive terms. So the court should not just assume that there is even pass-on happening in this case. We don't think it's clear. But because it's the motion to dismiss stage, you ought to take inferences in favor of the plaintiffs.
Thank you very much, Mr. questions? Chandler. We appreciate it. I think, certainly if anybody has any issues.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Robert Atkins. I represent the appellee, Becton Dickinson. Let me start by saying, or trying to reframe this, we do think this is the paradigmatic case forbidden by Illinois Brick. And conversely, it's the polar opposite of the vertical price-fixing conspiracy exception we've seen in this court's cases.
But you know, I mean, you can call it the paradigmatic Illinois Brick situation, but it's messy above the level of the provider, to say the least. And our court has recognized that when a conspiracy, or I'll even call it a joint venture or something, creates one unity, no matter how people are performing different roles, somebody may be manufacturing, somebody may be setting a price, somebody may be creating distribution services above the provider, the first real independent sale goes to the provider. So much of what the court was concerned about in Illinois Brick isn't there.
I would respectfully disagree. I think that the reason that the exception has only come up in this rare handful of vertical price-fixing conspiracies is that the sort of the fulcrum, the pivotal issue is there a passed-on overcharge? There's no dispute here. It's what's alleged. It's what's been briefed. The reply brief, the first argument is passed-on overcharges do not prevent suits. That's exactly what's prevented. Why? Because it's the passed-on overcharge that leads to the, I think what this court said, exquisitely difficult problem of tracing the overcharge and then apportioning it throughout the distribution chain.
But Apple did emphasize the relationship between the parties rather than the pass-on or there who set the price.
Well, I think what Apple stands for is that the question is who's the first party to have paid the overcharge?
Right, and that's the thing. It's actually in the sense of an overcharge, it's like my drug conspiracy, my heroin conspiracies. You know, money is changing hands before it reaches the final consumer. But there are really two things. One, I mean, your position, I think, is much more compatible with that of Justice Gorsuch than that of Justice Kavanaugh. And secondly, there's no need to apportion within a conspiracy, because all members of the conspiracy under the Pinkerton Doctrine and others are responsible for what all other members of the conspiracy do. So all of the Supreme Court's 1977 parade of horribles doesn't really happen.
Actually, this goes to the joint and several liability argument, but let me make two things.
Well, but it does, because the joint and several liability argument in very large part, answers both the court's concerns about allocation. Again, you don't have to worry. Maybe, you know, this actually takes us over into a Texas Industries sort of inquiry, you know, in a case, is there going to be contribution or, you know, indemnification or what have you? And we have that answer.
The liability or not of the distributor doesn't eliminate the tracing and overcharge, rather apportionment problem.
Why? If the final price is set by actually the GPO with whatever add-ons the distributor has, there's just a price that the provider has to pay, and then somebody has to decide how much of that price was anti-competitively driven.
In the case in which a distributor is also liable, the amount of the overcharge that a downstream customer could conceivably recover, setting aside the Illinois brick problem, can only be the amount that it's charged. And so, I mean, that's under Section 4 of the Clayton Act. You can only be, we can only recover the damage you have sustained. So whether or not the distributor is a plaintiff, as is often the case, or a defendant, or not there at all, the only amount that the downstream customer, again, setting aside the Illinois brick problem, could conceivably recover is what they actually paid. And that will require tracing the overcharge.
Now, would you agree that the logic of your position requires us to overrule paper systems in all of our cases that have recognized that conspiracies are different?
Not at all, Your Honor.
Why not?
Because the principle there is that if there is a conspiracy in which the distributor and the manufacturer are getting together to impose the overcharge, the inflated price, on a downstream customer, then Illinois Brick is simply not implicated. That's not an Illinois Brick problem.
Why haven't you described this case where there are quite a few mutual interests in the way this market is structured?
There are always mutual interests. It is not an uncommon...
No, but I mean at the above the provider level.
There's nothing unusual about a distributor, quote, benefiting because it gets a markup on top of a price charged by a manufacturer. I mean, since if Becton Dickinson were alleged to be a monopolist, as it has been in the sort of other versions of this case, the distributor would still be better off marking up an inflated monopoly price.
That's the double monopoly problem. I mean, that's, yeah.
No, but the point is the mere fact that a distributor benefits from the supplier's inflated prices doesn't make it a conspiracy, and most importantly...
But it's the reciprocity that's alleged in this... I mean, obviously, here we are in 12b-6, what do we know? But, you know, the reciprocity that's alleged, which would take this out of that.
Well, I'm not sure what reciprocity means. It means that the distributor is better off because it marks up an inflated price.
But the manufacturer is worse off if the distributor charges a monopoly price for distribution services. The manufacturer's interest is always to keep distribution prices down. But so if the manufacturer is, in fact, enhancing the distribution cost, what explains that?
But here we don't have that because there is competition among the distributors for distribution services. There's no allegation that any one of, I think there are four distributors in the case. There's no argument that either one of, none of those is a monopolist. So,
but they're being bought off, allegedly.
What,
you know, they're getting more for their distribution services than they would have been.
Well, as I said, the fact that they get more because they
can mark up... Against the manufacturer's self-interest.
That's not against the manufacturer's self-interest. Because, and this is kind of...
To be overcharged for distribution?
No, the manufacturer is not being overcharged for distribution. And this, let me, I think it's helpful to re-anchor this in the actual allegations. The allegation here, and let me just read from paragraph 42. What's the first thing that happens? As an initial matter, Becton and the GPOs, on behalf of the downstream customers, enter into contracts that control the pricing. The distributors aren't at the table. They're not present. They're not parties. They're not participants. Everything that's allegedly an exclusive deal with an inflated price and an overcharge is done, baked, before the distributors arrive. They describe the distributors as absent. Here's what happens next. Once a health, this is paragraph 44, I quote, once a healthcare provider decides, that's the plaintiff, to purchase Becton products pursuant to its contracts negotiated by its GPOs, then it, the customer, the plaintiff, it selects a distributor to do what? To deliver Becton's products and pass on the overcharge. Here's paragraph 35. So what happens is Becton and GPO, on behalf of healthcare providers, negotiate a price to the distributor.
But that's not only that's not the only money the distributor gets. The distributor doesn't just get the payment from the provider. The distributor is getting payments from the manufacturer as well.
No, that allegation is nothing more than the sort of ubiquitous practice of suppliers giving incentives and providing promotional materials to wholesalers in order to carry their product and stock it. There's nothing different, unique, or conspiratorial about offering to pay sales commissions to distributor reps who go around with their bag of products and give Becton preference over maybe one of its competitors. That's not unique. That doesn't create
an antitrust conspiracy. You agree that it's an additional payment. We'll have to decide what the significance is. But
I would agree that they have alleged that Becton.
So we have to assume right now. I'm sure you would come in later and.
We'll see what happens. I mean, I've already tried this case, so I'm kind of putting that aside. I mean, it's sort of surreal to be up here. I've tried everything that was alleged and won the case, and the Fifth Circuit, as you know, declared it to be meritless. But you'll forgive me. But let me finish on the allegation. So first thing that happens, Becton and the GPO, on behalf of the plaintiffs, negotiates a price that Becton is going to charge the distributor. That's the net dealer price. Distributor's nowhere to be seen. They are, in their words, absent. The next thing that happens is the plaintiff a hospital healthcare provider. It decides it wants to buy Becton products. And what does it do? It goes to its distributor. It selects, I'm quoting the complaint, it selects a distributor. Becton doesn't select the distributor. The hospital does. And what does it ask the distributor to do? Quote, to deliver Becton's products. Under the terms of the GPO contract, which the distributor has nothing to do with, has no role in, wasn't present. And this is critical. Paragraph 35.
But there are all these different contracts. There's the net dealer contract. There's, you know, the GPO arrangements. There's distributor agreements.
It's actually not that complicated. Number one, GPO contract. That's the net dealer contract.
Why doesn't that put all of them in a unity of interest? That's what I still don't understand. Because if they are in a unity of interest, then the first person outside the club is the provider.
To the contrary, Your Honor, if there was a conspiracy here, the plaintiffs are part of it. Their GPOs, and as Mr. Mello said, sometimes they do this directly, their GPOs go to the manufacturers and say, please give me a price that you will charge my distributor. Then I'll separately make a distribution agreement with my distributor, that's alleged, to sell me that product at that price with your profit margin. There's nothing circular, there's no web, it's a vertical distribution chain, and I think this is critical. Paragraph 35, the last thing that happens, so there's a contract between Becton and the customers, the customer picks a distributor and says, go get it from Becton. On what terms? Pursuant to the contract, I, the customer, have negotiated with Becton. The distributor is nothing but a delivery service, and here's the key. I got to get this out. Paragraph 35, the last thing that happens, the distributor purchases from Becton on terms dictated by the contracts with the downstream customers and then resells to the customers. The distributor here is, in fact, nothing other than a pass-through, a pass-on. Their function is to buy it and pass it on to the customer.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Atkins. Mr. Gershengorn.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Ian Gershengorn on behalf of the GPOs and distributors. I'd like to pick up on, Judge Wood, on your first question to Mr. Molo and explain why there is not an adequately alleged conspiracy here. And I'd like to get out two reasons briefly at the start and then discuss in more detail. First, although plaintiffs have premised their claim on an overarching conspiracy, as Your Honor said, a web, they have failed entirely to allege any agreement at all between or among the distributors and between or among the GPOs.
Well, it doesn't have to be between or among. That said, surely you can include a distributor and manufacturer agreement, an agreement between the distributors, or you know, the kind of the cross payments from the manufacturer to the GPO.
Your Honor, respectfully, the answer is no, and here's why. What Your Honor has postulated, and without that, forgive the rim, what you have is multiple vertical conspiracies. That is not sufficient. That's the case of Dixon. Remember, Dixon is Microsoft and then Dell and Compaq. And what the
but
court
you know,
there
let,
said.
Let me stop you on multiple vertical conspiracies. I know it's a big part of your argument, but actually, if you look back to the way the Supreme Court has treated vertical arrangements over the now many decades, you see the court concerned about the illegality of parallel vertical arrangements, even going all the way back to 1911 and Dr. Miles, where the court says all of these vertical arrangements could add up to a dealer cartel. Now, we all know in Legion, the actual rule of Dr. Miles gets overruled, but the dealer cartel concern didn't evaporate at that time.
So, Your Honor, you're absolutely right, but I think it's critical to distinguish what all of the Supreme Court's cases involve and what this court's case in Toys R Us involved and what Dixon and Hess did not have. Remember, we have Dixon and Hess saying that multiple vertical conspiracies without some tie around the rim is not actionable. And when
that's
you look
not
at
quite what we said in Toys R Us, although so I will grant you that in Interstate Circuit and in Toys R Us, the fact was that the various people, let's say the toy manufacturers, wanted some assurance that they weren't out there on a limb by themselves. But I would suggest that the allegations in this market are that the GPOs, we're talking about very small numbers of companies here, after all, this market is structured in a highly concentrated way. That must be relevant.
So, Your Honor, it could be relevant, but it has to be beyond mere knowledge. And, Your Honor, if I could just step back, Toys R Us is a perfect example. As Your Honor said, the toy makers required assurances that everyone was going to be there. They were acting against economic self-interest, giving up sales to the wholesalers. In every single case that the plaintiffs cite, there has been some agreement on the outside or some coordination. There is none alleged here. There is no agreement. There is no communications among the distributors.
How do you say that there's none alleged? I just don't understand.
There is no, I'm sorry, I left out a clause which is critical. There is no agreement alleged among the GPOs or among the distributors that would tie the multiple conspiracies together. There are no conversations among the GPOs or back and forth with Becton that would tie together the distributors.
Well, it's the back and forth with Becton. I'm glad you just added that because I think it is, in fact, through Becton that the GPOs and the distributors are playing their part. But this is not a case in which the plaintiffs are alleging that there was a distributor conspiracy. It's a case in which the plaintiffs are alleging that Becton, through the distributors and the GPOs who were playing ball with them, helping them do this, led to anti-competitive results at the provider level.
But Your Honor, one more time, I'm not aware of any case in which there is no evidence at all of communications by say, for example, the distributors or GPOs to Becton about the other distributors where there's no agreement
Why
among the
Why does that matter if because what each distributor is doing is helping Becton
because
monopolize the market?
It's precisely the difference between multiple vertical conspiracies and horizontal. If I could go pick up Your Honor's your drug hypo for 1 second, this court's Bustamante case, right? What that was a series of vertical drug deals, which Your Honor recognized. And what the court said was, the first defendant, he's in because he tried to help one of the other drug dealers. The second defendant, he's in because he had a big garage which stored more than his share. But the third defendant was not in, even though he was aware of the conspiracy.
Oh, sure. Because he didn't, that's the buyer-seller
doctrine. And that is exactly this case. There is no tie among the distributors. If I could,
if we were to agree with you that there was no tie, then I think you'd be right, the buyer seller. But on the allegations,
I don't think Your Honor will find a single allegation. No. If I might, I don't think that Your Honor will find a single allegation of agreement among the RIM, of communications among the RIM or through bus.
No, but communications at the RIM level up through the manufacturer and back down again.
But it has to go out to the sides again, because otherwise it's the multiple vertical conspiracies.
Do you think people in this market didn't know that GPOs were operating?
Your Honor, if I get one thing across, it is the position that knowledge alone is not sufficient for agreement. Hess says that you need something else. But if I could just pivot in my short time to the second argument, which is that they have brought in the distributors. And Your Honor, they need the distributors to get around Illinois Brick. And so, Your Honor, you asked about enforcement. There is no enforcement here. There's no refusal to deal. There's no conduct against. What do we have? We have an agreement to enforce a contract that the distributors had no involvement in creating. There are payments from Becton, as Mr. Atkins said. Those are payments to promote or prioritize a manufacturer's product, routine across industries, in distribution all around the country. And third, there are payments to GPOs when the complaint alleges the GPOs provide valuable service. None of those are against self-interest. None of those require assurances that the other distributors are involved. And they are brought in. The distributors are brought in. This seems to me critical. Distributors are brought in because plaintiffs come to them with a signed contract and they say to the distributors, please give me my product, please give it to me at this price. It cannot be an antitrust violation for a distributor who has hundreds of thousands of products, right? Band-Aids, syringes, splints, you know, medicine.
I think we have your point.
To say it.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gershengorn. Yeah. Mm. All right, Mr. Molo, you've got 2 minutes and 17 seconds.
First, as to Becton's arguments, who sets the price is irrelevant. Who participates in the conspiracy is what matters. Apple recently, Justice Kavanaugh said that they were trying. He was not going to convert the direct purchaser rule into a who sets the price rule, and so that's just not an issue here. On this Fifth Circuit case, the retractable case, that was the plaintiffs there were competitors. It was a Section 2 claim. Conspiracy wasn't alleged. The Becton point about there being problems with apportioning liability, the question is there an apportionment of damages among various categories of purchasers, of innocent purchasers? And there is none under this because, as paper system holds, there's joint and several liability. The first innocent purchaser can collect the full amount of damages.
So Mr. Atkins insists that we still need to engage in some analysis of the pass-through before we figure out what was anti-competitive about the price that came out at the end of the process.
But that, as the opinion says in paper systems, is irrelevant to the question of who has standing. Ultimately, we're entitled to pay
So you're just focusing specifically on, can you go forward with this case? You want us to worry about damages amounts later. Although Illinois Brick does worry about damages amounts up front.
But there's no concern about it here because of the joint and several liability and the fact that we're entitled simply to the difference between what we paid and what we would have paid in an honest market. It's quite that simple.
Do you think you can just pretermit the whole passing on thing by saying, here's what a competitive price would have looked like using your economic
in the
experts.
But-for world. That's why there are economists and econometrics. And lastly, if you accept their position, there could be no private enforcement of the antitrust laws in this context because we have alleged, and again, we have to prove this, but that the distributors are in fact part of the conspiracy. If we're not allowed to bring this claim and the distributors are conspirators, there's no one that's going to bring this claim. And of course, the enforcement of free markets and honest markets is largely depended significantly on the work of private plaintiffs, and their rule would throw it out. As to the conspiracy claims, I think we've been through it all, and we've clearly pled what's there, and that no individual act examined on its own is sufficient to take it out of the realm of what has been pled as concerted activity. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Thanks to all counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.